Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the Modern SaaS Podcast. And today we are here with a surprise, surprise internal new guest, that is Nate Hymus, the VP of Sales at Avoma. So first of all, welcome, Nate. It's been almost, I think, more than a month. How are you doing here?
Well, thank you, Yag, for having me here on this podcast. I'm very excited. Hello to all you listeners. Thanks for tuning in. And I'm doing fantastic. I have truly enjoyed coming on board with the Avoma team. They're incredible. The product is fantastic. And I'm all around just excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm super excited about today's topic of discussion as well. And I think you're the right person to discuss that. In fact, you know, we focus a lot on the sales audience and we talk about these, you know, pipeline reviews every now and then. But what happens is more often than not, we have a very focused vision of how a pipeline review should be run. And you've been in the field for, I think, more than two decades. So, you know, give us your perspective of how it has been and, you know, how the current modern way of running a pipeline review should be. What is the larger perspective for you?
Right. Yeah, I think over my career, I've seen sales probably morph and change every two or three years, right? The way that SDRs go about finding new prospects, the way that we have to sell. COVID really changed a lot of adapting to a more of a remote selling process, right? There's not as much traveling. We're working hard to get to send text messages to prospects, and we're getting a lot more savvy in the way we interact with potential prospects on social media. So there's been a lot of changes that have been that have happened, and the pipeline review has historically been a lot about metrics and what do those metrics tell us. And then as a leader, how do I take those metrics and how do I report up to my executive team and make sure that my executive team's presenting to my board appropriately. But I think when we do that, we're only focusing on one side of the coin. The other side of the coin and the real purpose of the pipeline review is how do I support my reps to be very successful. So as a leader, as a sales leader, as you're running that pipeline review, it's really about reporting up, but more importantly, supporting your reps from a downstream perspective as well.
Right, right. And one of the things that we discussed internally is that, you know, you always said that it is more than just metrics. You know, give us a little more into that perspective. What does that actually mean? You know, when we look at more than perspectives, because at the end of the day, we all have numbers to chase. And there is a larger purpose, there is a larger goal that we all are working towards. So what does that truly mean?
That's a great question and probably a sensitive subject for many sales leaders. I think anybody who has been in sales for, let's say, a decade has had that pipeline review where your manager shows up and says, what are you committing this week? What's your best case? What's your worst case? Right? Okay, thank you. And they take those numbers, they may ask a couple of questions about them, and then they move on to the next level of reporting. We're missing a lot with that. We're really missing, what do those metrics tell us, right? If my rep is saying, I'm committing a deal, we should be saying, well, why are we committing that deal? Why are you committing that deal? And what day are you committing it on? And why is it that day? And what's going to be the price of that deal? And why is that the price? Why are you choosing that? What are the indicators that your customer has given you? I think as sales leaders, sometimes we're moving so quickly, we just want to grab those metrics because they're part of the reporting process on a weekly or monthly basis, and we just want to get them done. But I think that there's a story behind all of those metrics, and we need to be very careful as sales leaders to not just collect them and then be done with the conversation, because there's a lot of good we can do as experienced SaaS leaders with our reps, especially the reps earlier on in their careers, to really understand the patterns of why these metrics are important and what we can do with them beyond reporting up internally, right? Let's internalize it with the rep. Let's help our reps understand, what does it mean to really commit a deal, right? And what are the steps that we need to take to get that deal done, right? It isn't just about, hey, I'm committing $50,000 in closed deals this month. Let's do a little bit of exploring and provide value back to them.
Right, right. You know, one of the things that we also were talking about internally is about the controllable aspects that we have and, you know, what we can get as the outcome. And I know you have your own unique perspective as to, you know, how to map between inputs and outcomes. Let's talk about that. You know, how do you see inputs correlating into outcomes? And do you even believe that, you know, the entire sales compensation should be mapped to outcomes or should it be mapped to inputs?
Well, Yang, I think we're opening up a very dangerous portal here into the sales universe. Historically, I think for all time, salespeople have been paid on their specific outcome. But as you think about that, if we do a shift paradigm a little bit on that topic or on that perspective, nobody has complete control over closing a deal. There may be some deals that sales reps run really proficiently and really well, but at the end of the day, that's not always happening. You can't say with 100% certainty that anybody is controlling the narrative, the conversation, the process from beginning to end, right? There are so many variables that take place. And although hope is not a strategy, as long as you line up everything correctly in a deal cycle, you get to the end of it and there's a little bit of hope saying, I've done everything I can. I hope that they go with me. And what's interesting is because that's not 100% controllable, I find it odd that we only pay on the commission retired. Now, like I said, I'm kind of opening up Pandora's box a little bit to talk about that in a sales podcast. But it is interesting to think, I'm sure every leader and every rep that listens to this phone call can say, you know, that's actually true. I can't control whether or not somebody actually buys. At some point, it gets to a, I hope I've done my job well enough. I hope that they see the value and I hope that they purchase. Which is interesting because as sales leaders, especially in the pipeline review, we're focused so much on those metrics. I think, and I haven't tested this out yet. It's kind of on my to-do list the back half of this year, but I think that the focus needs to be significantly heavier on the inputs. And I've been socializing this idea of, can we pay reps on the input? If we know that there are certain inputs that are going to generate the revenue downstream, and we've got the data to prove it, why aren't we also paying or compensating or doing something with those important inputs that go in? Because at the end of the day, salespeople are creatures that are coin operated, and they're going to follow the behavior that is incentivized for them. So if you say, I'm going to solely pay you on your quota, retired, then they're going to forget about everything else except getting that quota retired, regardless of the impact that could have on the company. And I've worked at plenty of software startups where we just didn't sell deals right, but that was because we had to retire the quota. And that's how we were judged. And then that customer, we may lose them 7 or 9 months later because how they started with us was not on the right footing, right? But what if, you know, and I'm completely spitballing here. For those of you listening, I haven't put enough thought behind this to confidently say this is the direction we should go. But I've been socializing a couple of ideas of you know, there's the call metrics and the email metrics inputs, but there's other inputs too that could be really valuable. What about a social presence? How many of our reps in this social selling world should we be requiring or having a presence on LinkedIn and commanding a presence, right? Becoming the experts on social media. And that's a fantastic input. Another input for a sales rep is their technical proficiency of the product. I'll tell you, the very best reps I've met in my life are the ones that could have easily been solutions engineers because they intimately have a strong understanding of the product. And although most companies require some level of certification with the product, is there more there that we can do from an inputs perspective to really set the reps up to be successful? And so if you take that just product knowledge and that social selling, we're actually building significant confidence in what the rep is capable of doing. And then you put that together with their selling, and they may be able to be more powerful in what they're able to close. Better, larger, faster deals. In addition to that, I'm convinced that if they can command a social presence and have an intimate understanding of the product, then they're less of a flight risk for leaving the company. And so I do think that there is an input versus outcome conversation that should be had in the sales world. Now, am I the right person to have it? I don't know. I'm really just testing this out and giving it some thought. I'm happy to come back to listeners at a later date and let them know what did or didn't work, but it certainly should be considered as part of the pipeline review, right? Let's not just focus on the outcomes because those are uncontrollable. What's controllable is the inputs that we put in.
No, I absolutely love this because, you know, we were also espousing this concept of a collaborative selling, wherein we spoke about it takes an entire village to close a deal, where it's, while there is one side, yes, definitely, you know, there is an SDR team, there is an AE team that is putting their wholehearted efforts into getting something done. But then we also have to leverage the help from a partner, or sometimes, you know, a help from an existing customer. Sometimes it's the sales enablement team that comes together. It can be people, process, and tools collaborating together. There are so many aspects. But I love that, you know, you have excessive focus on the inputs, because at the end of the day, what we want to do is make sure that the experience across the process is nice for the customer. And it's not like, you know, they don't want to feel the commission breath coming into the conversation.
That's right. That's exactly right. They don't, right? Especially because it's not controllable. You know, there's a difference between transactional and enterprise deals that close. We're fortunate enough at Avoma to have very transactional deals, which I love, because you create a strong winning environment fast, right? And you continue to win. But there are a lot of companies out there, software companies, that are more enterprise focused. And if a rep misses a big deal, they completely miss their quota. And the immediate concern is, hey, my head's on the chopping block. I don't know if they're going to fire me or not, right? I missed my quota. But in reality, if you look at the inputs, the rep is doing all the right inputs. It's just a matter of waiting until the company is ready to buy. It's a timing game. And then when they finally do, he's a hero and he hit the outputs. But in reality, it comes back to control of those inputs.
No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things as part of the prep to this conversation today, you know, you were talking about, it's not just about closing deals, but about advancing them. And to me, that was a very interesting extension to what we just spoke. So can you give us a little bit of perspective of what you meant by that? You know, what is advancing a deal? How is it different from closing a deal?
Sure. Yeah, this is one of the areas that I really struggled with as a rep when I would have pipeline reviews. There would be such a heavy focus on what's closing and what do we need to do to close it. And as a younger rep, I would say, okay, that's what my manager is really interested in. So that's what I'm going to focus on. And we would close those deals. And then my pipeline was relatively empty, or the deals I had in there didn't get the attention that they needed. And then, you know, I had to pick up the shovel and start digging all over again. And then my manager in the pipeline review would focus again on closing the deals. And so I'd only focus on those deals. And it became this very cyclical sales cycle that I'd build up my pipe, I'd empty my pipe, and I would start all over. And as sales leaders, we need to be very, very careful of doing that, because that's how we create kind of those roller coaster quota metrics, right? What we want to do is figure out how can we maintain a very steady close rate, quarter over quarter, month over month. And a couple of years ago, I started formulating this idea and had a couple of sales colleagues help me simplify it, but I call it the create, advance, close model, where we always need to be focused on deals across three different buckets. We need to focus on what's coming in at the top of funnel, and I call that the create, because that's just as important as the deals that we're advancing. And we need to talk about the deals that are advancing and how we get them to the next stages in the cycle, whether it's early in the funnel or later in the funnel. And we also have to put an emphasis on the close, right? How do we get that signature on the piece of paper? And as part of that pipeline review, I have made it a point to make sure that I'm giving enough time to talk about deals in each one of those categories. Because you may find that you have a rep that isn't focusing on that create motion. Or you may have a rep that isn't good at advancing deals. And so you need to train your reps at those different stages how to be very proficient and effective, and make sure they're giving the proper attention at each one of those stages too, so that you can always have a healthy pipeline. So again, I call it create, advance, close. It's not a silver bullet, but it gives a very clear picture of during a deal or a pipeline review of where this particular rep is at and what we need to do to help them improve in coming weeks and months and quarters.
So I'm typically picturing this more like a typical HubSpot kind of a funnel, where there are deals at each stages. But when you say there are deals in the advance and the close stages, does it mean that the ones in advance are not moving forward, or is it in the negotiation stage, or what stage is that actually in?
Yeah, what's interesting is, I think this is unanimous across all SaaS companies, but deals always get to a point where they might not just be advancing naturally. And that's ideal, is that there's organic advancement, but you run into all sorts of variables in every deal where they may just stall, right? Or you don't know how to advance them. But what I always tell my reps is we have to have a scheduled next event on every deal. Otherwise it's stalled, right? So if you get off a phone call with a prospect and you don't have a next step or a scheduled next event or anything they've agreed to in the future, your deal is stalled, right? And it's those deals that we have to go look at and say, okay, now how do we advance them? And sometimes as a rep, you're so focused on the different variables and you're emotionally engaged that you're kind of in this forest and you can't see through the trees. Whereas as a leader, I can come in with not as much knowledge about the deal per se, but an understanding of how to navigate some of these situations where we're stuck and just try to break something loose and progress the deal. And that's what we want to talk about around advancing or moving a deal through a funnel. Momentum is key with a deal, right? And time kills all deals. So you want to keep that deal progressing as quickly as possible. And then there's a lot of sales tips and tricks that exist. You can find online. A lot of experienced reps will have them. But the idea is how do we make sure that a deal isn't stalling? How do we make sure it's always progressing? So when I talk about the advanced stage with my reps, I actually have a little checkbox inside of our CRM where before every pipeline review meeting, they have to check a box of this deal's progressing or this deal is stalling. And then I know, hey, I run a report and I say, let's focus on these deals that are stalled. And the definition of stalled is that there's not a next step that has been set and agreed to. And then we can focus on that advancement stage of the deal.
I love that. It's interesting that I started my career in sales. I was actually a BDR in the beginning of my career. And all I had to do was make 150 calls a day. I'm talking about 2011, 2010. And at that point, I just had a list which was chopped, used. And, I used to make these calls. And I was only, the fun part of the input style of measurement there was that I was measured only by the number of calls that I made. And that to me was frustrating because, you know, I knew that there were better ways of prospecting and reaching out the right kind of people, identifying them in so many different places rather than doing this. But yeah, I love the part where you said that it's about making sure that once you have a foot in the door, it's about making sure that it's progressing. You have the next step pointed out, and it's probably one of the 101s in spin selling.
That's right.
Yeah. And from a marketing interest, I always love talking about if we have a strategic, narrative for the throughout the process. You know, let's talk about that a little bit. And you also believe a lot about controlling the narrative throughout the story. Sounds a little bit like challenger sales, but I would love to hear more from you on that.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a mix of challenger sale and a couple other, well, quite frankly, it probably takes pieces from all the different types of sales training out there. But I learned this in my last role as an enterprise rep is that people want to buy from obviously somebody they trust and they're confident in, but also somebody that can hold their hand and walk them through the sales cycle. So a lot of people out there that are buying software for the first time or buying your type of product for the first time, right? And if it isn't the first time, they probably haven't done it in years. Or if they did do it recently, it was a terrible experience. They picked a product and they picked wrong, right? So there's all sorts of different variables that kind of make the buying process a negative experience for buyers. Nobody wakes up in the morning so excited to buy SaaS, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, that's not true. Maybe there are a couple of people that say, hey, I really love to do this. I really love evaluating software. It's my jam. I just don't know very many. Buying software is not fun. Think about the experience that people buying software have. They do research online. They come to, three or five different vendors. They hop on the phone with these vendors. They've already done their research or they don't even hop on the phone. A BDR calls them because they found them, right? Marketing found them on a website. BDR calls them and the prospect has done their research. They kind of know what they're looking at. The BDR starts asking questions that are completely irrelevant to what the buyer is thinking. But the buyer knows the process. They're like, oh, okay, I'll answer your questions. And he's like, okay, I hope I'm done. I hope now that I've answered the question for the BDR, I don't have to answer any more questions. Well, lo and behold, the AE now gets on the phone for touch point number two. Ask the exact same questions.
Yes.
And the buyer's just like, oh, can I just see a demo of the product? That's all I want. And the sales rep says, no, not yet. I have a few more questions to ask. Well, can you tell me pricing? No, I can't tell you pricing. I have a few more questions. It's like, oh man. So that whole process, it's just painful. controlling the narrative is about switching that up. It's about the BDR on the very first call selling through the customer's lens, right? Imagine how that would change if the BDR got a hold of the prospect and said, hey, I understand that you're doing research. Thank you so much for looking at our product. We've done XYZ for other companies. We're very confident in how we could potentially help you. I think that we're a good fit. Let me walk you through how companies buy with us. Let me walk you through the process, right? As a buyer, I think there's almost an immediate sigh of, oh, okay, thank you. Yes, tell me up front what I'm getting into, right? And you walk them through the process. You say, hey, look, my job is to just make sure that there's a fit and that it's worth both of our times. An AE will get engaged, right? And then from there, the sales process continues. But imagine if the buyer all of a sudden had the ability to say, well, actually, I don't need to talk to the sales rep just yet. Or if I talk to the sales rep, can we just do a demo? Right? We're giving them the chance to set up the sales experience that they want to have. And then on our end, we can control it. We can say, well, actually, it's not a good idea to do a demo on the next call. And the reason it's not a good idea is because we need to understand points A, B, and C, because that will drive a customized demo specifically for you in your environment. And those are the questions that I want to ask. So if you let me ask those questions, I can give them to the AE, and then maybe on the next call, we could be in a position to do that. If not, then you'll have to have an extra call. And so I think there's a way that we as salespeople can put ourselves in our prospect's shoes, and we can educate them, and we can control that conversation to a point where we're helping them enjoy this buying process instead of dreading it. Well, enjoy is probably not the right word. Maybe they just won't hate it. And in my opinion, I do think that a big part of the way that software is bought is on, does it have the right functionality? But I would be making a big mistake if I didn't say, there's a piece of that decision on which vendor you buy that is on, do I trust who I was talking to? Do I trust the company? And how did they treat me during that buying process? And that's why it's so important to try and control that conversation and that narrative instead of just letting the customer or prospect take off with it, be frustrated. You kind of got to rein it in a little bit. I was rambling on a bit there. I'm very passionate about this topic. I think that making a good buying experience is so important, but I hope that made sense and resonated.
No, that absolutely made a lot of sense to me. But if we can also touch a little bit more on, as part of the review process, how does this come into play? Now, I can understand, deals advancing or what stage it is in, or looking at the different metrics, so on and so forth. But if you can put that into perspective as to how narrative fits into the review, that would be really great for all the listeners here.
Yeah, I'll tie it all back together. It's such an important piece of it. So during the pipeline review, I think as sales leaders, a lot of times we gloss over the strategy behind a deal, right?
Yeah.
So for example, if I'm working with one of my reps and I say, okay, how are we going to advance this deal? They say, well, I got to get them on the phone and we need to set a time for the demo.
Yeah.
Okay, great. But what's the strategy there? How are we controlling that narrative? Well, I'm going to send them an email and ask them for a few times and let them know that, hey, we can cover these topics, and hopefully that they respond. And controlling the narrative is about not giving that prospect the opportunity to say no. It's about crafting an email that explains to them the value during the sales process of why the demo is the next step and why we need to get on the phone and why we need to do it now.
Yeah.
And the impact that it will have. And that's what controlling the narrative is all about. Is it's not we're asking for permission. We're directing how they buy this software. Right?
Right.
You can say, hey, this next step pertains to comparing us to the different competitors you're looking at. This next step pertains to, the specific requirements that you have, et cetera. But it's about, that's controlling the narrative. And one of the most important pieces of controlling the narrative is understanding upfront what the requirements are for the customer. And one of the challenges with this is as salespeople, we kind of get tunnel vision and we think we know what their needs are. But the trick is to not find their requirements and need from a software perspective, but to find it from a business need perspective, and then take our software and tie it back into that business need. And then that gives us what we need to control that conversation and that narrative, which will set up our next steps, which will drive that deal forward, which brings value to the conversations we're having in our pipeline review.
Amazing. I think, over the last 25 minutes or so, we covered a ton. And I love the structure in which, you know, it's like picking different flowers and making it a nice garland and still, getting that into a good string. So we started from talking about, you know, pipeline reviews not being just about looking at each metrics and seeing if we have hit them or not. And you also spoke very nicely about how it's about making sure that the inputs are right at each stage and not necessarily being excessively focused on outcomes so that we get the things right. And then I love the story model where you said that, hey, it's not just about deals or closing deals all the time, but it's about, are you creating enough opportunities? And then are you advancing enough opportunities? And then are you also closing them? Do you have a close date? So, and then finally, you are kind of connected all together with the narrative piece, which helps move from one stage to another. Am I missing anything here, or did we get things right?
I think we did. I'm very passionate about this subject. I'm sure there's still lots that I can learn too, but I hope there are listeners out there that can take a nugget or two and input it into their processes and their cycles. And if they've got any questions, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and we can discuss this more.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much, Nate. You know, it was fantastic. And I'm hoping to have more of these sessions with you to, get the best nuggets of sales wisdom out there. So yeah, thank you once again so much.
Yep, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right, so that's that from us, listeners. And until we connect with you the next time on another topic, we really request you to look forward to our episodes, give us some feedback. As always, you know, feel free to DM us and let us know what you liked, what you didn't, and support us with 5 stars. And thank you so much for your time and see you soon. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.